Do a Google search of Newark, New Jersey. You'll find result after result highlighting the city's history and heritage. Newark's been the home of industry, business development, growth, innovation, top medical facilities, and within all of that, families who for generations called Newark home. Look at Newark today, yeah, quite a different view, is it not? Why is that? What was the cause of the downfall of a once mighty and safe city? There are sociologists who can offer long, drawn-out monologues about what happened, but my first guest today gets much more quickly to the point with his new best-selling book, Untenable, the true story of white ethnic flight from America's cities. We say good morning to Jack Cashel. Thanks for being here today, Jack.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. And, just to get cut right to the chase, the answer is to your question is implied in the title. I got that title from a friend who was a diehard Democrat, the last guy to leave the block, living there with his widowed mother. And I said to him when I was interviewing people for the book, I said, why did you leave? Why did you leave the block? And he said, it became untenable. And I said, what do you mean by untenable? Be specific. He goes, when your mother gets mugged for the second time, that's untenable. When your home gets invaded for the second time, that's untenable. You take his story, multiply it by a million, and you have the story of white flight from American cities. It wasn't just Newark. No, cities all across the Northeast and North Central United States.
I mean, I was just going to say that, too, because reading your book, Untenable, the focus is Newark as far as the foundation of the story. But having spent more time personally down in Atlantic City than I have in Newark, I see parallels between those two cities, as a matter of fact. You can say the same about Camden, and if someone's listening on the stream outside New Jersey, I'm sure they're thinking of a city in their part of the country right now as well. But talk about the Newark that you remember and you write about. Untenable.
I grew up in I'm a baby boomer, and I grew up in the 60s. That was my adolescent era. And in 1960, my neighborhood in Newark, it's called Roseville, it's just an unassuming neighborhood of like thousands of other neighborhoods, almost entirely ethnic, heavily Catholic. I went to Catholic schools, all my life. When I talk to people from the neighborhood, the word that keeps coming up about Newark circa 1960 was idyllic. I mean, our neighborhood was such a perfectly compact little place. I didn't learn to ride a bicycle until I was 30. I didn't have to. There were shops up and down the streets of all sorts, and buses downtown, buses to New York City, two movie theaters that were functioning, and our life really centered around the church and the school. And so we weren't dependent on public schools. That didn't matter. Our block was integrated from the time I can remember. Our neighbors were black when we moved there, and it was stable. And then it all fell apart in the 60s remarkably quickly. That wasn't a one-off. That was happening to neighborhoods all across the country. And the causes were, basically, to cut to the chase, it was just very bad governmental policies, local, state, and national level. And they unleashed a wave of crime, and they crippled the schools. And the net result is that people felt like they had no choice but to leave.
And for you listening, if you're starting to arch your back, where we're going with this conversation, you have to be informed, too, that Jack just doesn't make observations. You did your research. You go through archives. You look through census data. You look at, I always say with polls, for example, it's not what the poll says. It's what the trend says it's going to. And what you present in the trends, I mean, you document what Patrick Monahan prognosticated.
Yeah, I do, and I cite the Moynihan Report, which was critical. It came out in 1965, the same year as the Great Society was launched. And Lyndon Johnson realized that, if he's going to buy votes, one of those entities has got to go, and it's not the Great Society. It's the Moynihan Report, so they deep-sixed it, even though it was entirely accurate. What Moynihan said at that time, the fatherlessness population in the black community was about 25%, and he said, if this trend continues, despite the expectations for equal outcomes that blacks will have because of the passage of all the civil rights legislation, they will always be frustrated because children from fatherless homes aren't going to be able to compete writ large in general with children from homes with two loving parents who care about them. on my block at the 1950 census, and that was the last one that's publicly available, out of the 85 homes on the block is a working class block, entirely ethnic, immigrants from 14 different countries on the block. There were 83 heads of male married heads of households out of 85 households. And there was a level of stability in those ethnic communities, Irish, Italian, Jewish, et cetera, that made them, that gave their children a sense of upward mobility, a sense of solidity, a sense of stability going forward. And the competition was widening. After blacks had been narrowing the gap in income up to about 1960, the trend reversed itself. And the result has been devastating for the black community. It hasn't recovered anywhere.
Talking with Jack Cashel, his new bestseller, Untenable, the true story of white ethnic flight from America's cities. Cashel.com on Twitter at Jack Cashel. We have those links over at our homepage. And you were listening to Issues and Ideas. This isn't to ignore what was fact, that in the 50s into the 60s, certainly a voice for demanding equality and equity and opportunity rose. But combined with what you point out in Untenable, where the black family really shattered for a variety of reasons. I mean, again, sociologists can look at the hows and the whys. Every case, you can probably find something different. But did the response to the rising voice from the black community, from people like the mayors and the police and every so-called member of leadership in Newark, did they just not hear right and responded very wrong?
Yeah, no, they weren't listening. They did not want to hear that message because, for instance, the civil rights establishment had been geared up to fight basically against institutional white racism. And they did, and they did it successfully. And the winners of that battle were heroes. But once institutional white racism yielded to institutional white guilt, that allowed for the opportunists to take center stage. So you go from an era that produced like a Medgar Evers and a Martin Luther King to an era that produced Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. And these guys had no interest in solving a problem. To them, progress was anathema. They could not let people know that the doors were wide open now. And not only were they wide open, but they were getting a leg up and major corporations, universities, military, et cetera. So they had to keep preaching the gospel of victimization. And combine that with the natural frustrations that came from living in disorderly households created a problem that was widespread and devastating to the black community, even more than to the white community.
Does part of the responsibility as well fall upon the black community for cultivating that victimization? And I say this as someone who, over the years of my doing this, I've called out Catholics for turning a blind eye to raping abusive priests. I've called out Muslims who turned a blind eye to the radicalization of their faith. If you hold the door open to something bad, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, right. If you subsidize and encourage an attitude, you're going to get more of it. And that's what's happened. And, you know, what's interesting, too, Chris, is that, you know, as I found is that, you know, the media like to talk about white people, but growing up in the 60s, we thought of ourselves by our ethnicity. I'm Irish. You know, our neighbor was Irish, mostly Irish, Italian. There's a lot of Jews in Newark. They're Portuguese or Puerto Ricans or blacks. But the media like to lump us into white and black. But each ethnic group responded differently to the pressures. And that one is true across the country. So Jews in Newark responded like Jews in Chicago or Boston. Los Angeles. And that is, they were the most welcoming, the blacks, incoming blacks. They were the most, they were the ones that set up committees of welcome and harmony and conciliation, and they were the first ones out. It's because they were, their vulnerability was their dependence on public education. Not only public education, but good quality public education. And as long as they had that in their own schools that were predominantly Jewish, you know, they would have stayed forever. But once they lost that assurance that their kids were getting a quality education, they had little choice but to move because the community has such high academic standards. Italians, on the other hand, were probably the least welcoming, but the last to flee. they weren't inclined to flee. So the net result was for the white ethnic groups, you were damned if you did and damned if you didn't. If you were first to flee, you were white flight. If you were the last to flee, you were racist vigilantes. They had names for everyone. You know, they had derogatory names, the media did, for every branch of ethnicity that there was. And yet blacks fled for the same reason, but they were spared the shaming that went to whites. And what's remarkable, Chris, is that until this book, no one had thought to ask the people who fled why they fled, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, you can, like I said back in the introduction, you have these overeducated individuals with their theories and theses, but what Jack does with Untenable, and I'm going to close with this survey. Fairleigh Dickinson University just came out with this a couple of days ago. They polled Newark residents. 68% said they feel very or somewhat safe walking in the neighborhoods during the day. That number drops to 42% at night. Citywide, 34% of residents say Newark's gotten better as a place to live over 2 years, but 34% of blacks, 28% of Hispanics say it has not, that it has gotten worse. So the observation is there, Jack, but do you have any hope that when someone reads and absorbs the memoir portion of your book, Untenable, and they see what's a family life was in that city, and any city really where all hell is broken loose, what do we have to do to get enough people to say, you know what, we want that again and we can make that happen again?
Well, you know, it happened in New York City in 1993 when, you know, for the 4 years of the Dinkins era, the city was averaging 2,500 homicides a year. By the time the 20-year reign of Giuliani and Bloomberg was finished, that number was down to 350, 400. So they were saving 2,000 lives a year, mostly people of color. And what happened in 93 is that an overwhelmingly Democratic city said, we got to get tough. This is enough. I mean, that's what people basically said in my neighborhood. Enough is enough, and they left. But if you get a collective of people saying that, and Lord knows they need to say it in New York and San Francisco, Los Angeles and Chicago, they're not yet at that point. Right now, it's the laptop class that's fleeing, you know, and they're not calling it white flight because they're the ones who are writing the articles about, or not writing about the articles. So you just got to get tough and up once again. That happened. It can happen again. And things are so much worse now, even than they were in the 60s. It's bound to happen.
It is a fascinating and really caring story of a family memoir, as well as the story of the fall of a great city. Can a fall be recovered from? Well, it depends how hard the work is and how heavy the fall was. But with Jack's book, Untenable, The True Story of White Ethnic Flight from America's Cities, you get the understanding, which I think could serve as that foundation for family, as well as for pride in what either is or was your home city. Cashel.com on Twitter at Jack Cashel. Jack, you're a great storyteller as always and a teacher as well. Thanks for doing that and for being here today.
Hey, Chris, thanks for this. This is an excellent interview. I'm glad you understood the book as well as you did.